This is Governor Jim Douglas. As a WRMC-FM alumnus, I hope you'll stay tuned for interesting music, the latest news, and sports right here at 91.1 on your FM dial.
Welcome back to Great Ideas with Greg and Rob. In the studio with us today, we have Thomas Beyer, author of 33 Keys to Unlocking the Lost Symbol, a reader's companion to the Dan Brown novel. And we're just going to be asking some questions, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me, Greg, and good morning, Rob.
Great. All right, so just starting off, Rob had a question for you, like a general question.
Yeah, I think a good place to start where most people are familiar with Dan Brown is the Da Vinci Code. And I wanted to know your opinion of why you think it became such a phenomena in America, and why it caught on, and sort of what that says about American culture and its literary taste.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Rob, that a number of the things that Dan Brown says in that book, he begins the book with a statement of fact, where he talks about the existence of the Priory of Zion, apparently this French continuation of a bloodline of Jesus Christ, and then he also speaks about Opus Dei, an organization that exists inside of the Catholic Church. And he begins all of these novels that are now a series. It's a little bit like the James Bond series, Angels and Demons, The Da Vinci Code, and then The Lost Symbol. And when he states these things are fact, I think many readers then begin his novels and assume that much of what he says in there about the Rosicrucians, the Knights Templar, secret temples, the Illuminati, secret societies, conspiracy theories, that all of this is actual fact too. And I began about 5 years ago with a first-year seminar, the purpose of which was to separate out fact from fiction in the Dan Brown novels.
So would you say one of the reasons that this did become the phenomena that it is that people took the books to be purely fact?
I don't think they took all of it to be fact, but separating out the fact from fiction for many people, I think, is a very difficult and hazy area. And Dan Brown, of course, lives and dies, in a sense, in his novels on that mixture of fact and fiction that makes us wonder, is that really so? And he uses lots of things in The Lost Symbol, for example. He says, the truth is hidden before your very eyes. And I think the people of Middlebury, for example, and the students might be surprised that every time they walk downtown, up by the old courthouse is the old Masonic building in Middlebury. And if you raise your eyes and look up, you'll see the Masonic symbol and a Masonic dating system. Instead of 1823, you see 5823.
Huh. I'll have to take notice of that when going to town. So there's a look at the phenomena. My question is, what draws you to Dan Brown personally? Why do you like Dan Brown? Because you're a professor of Russian language and literature here at Middlebury College. And Dan Brown seems a bit removed from the Russian lifestyle.
Well, this is certainly not Dostoevsky, and I certainly enjoyed The Brothers Karamazov and think that that may rise to the level of great literature. But when I was a student, the real rage was the entire series of James Bond novels. And James Bond had all of these trappings that particularly marked him, the fast cars, the secret weapons, the beautiful women, the particular type of vodka martini that he would drink. And I think Dan Brown fits into that category now. He's always has Robert Langdon, theoretically a professor at Harvard University, who arranges his life to travel to different major cities, whether it be Washington or Rome, Paris, finds mysteries, solves clues and puzzles, and at the end of the day, always seems to win out. And it's certainly light reading. The difference, however, with Dan Brown, I think, and it's a very important one, is that books and literature have, over the past centuries, often been used or misused, as it were, for evil purposes. There is a very famous book that actually was published in Russia, The Elders of Zion, that most reasonable people knew was a fraud. And yet that book was later used by Adolf Hitler and members of the Nazi elite to justify the extermination or the attempt to exterminate the Jews in Europe. So I think it's very important that we get down to the truth and what lies behind the fiction.
Okay. So keeping these novels and their messages in perspective are an important aspect of the reader's job.
And you mentioned Robert Langdon, and he shows up again in The Lost Symbol. And I just want to see if you give us a quick overview of the books or what he's trying to figure out this time. Like he's in a new setting. He's not going through Paris. He's in Washington, D.C. If you could give us some plot summaries.
Sure. Well, we don't want to give the whole novel away, but Robert Langdon ends up flying into Washington, D.C., where he's apparently been invited to give a lecture in the nation's capital. Actually, I was speaking with Senator Leahy's office yesterday, and they're going to offer me a special congressional tour of the Capitol in the break that we have. And I'm very grateful to the senator for that courtesy. But that's where it begins. And from the very beginning, he shows us, or we see places inside of the Capitol that may not have been noticed. There is a wonderful painting on the dome inside, which everyone can see if you go to the visitor center. And he takes us up there, and we get a new look at George Washington. And that begins a set of clues that connect George Washington and early Americans to the Masons. One of the things he says is that there are millions, hundreds of millions, perhaps a billion people in the world who carry a Masonic symbol with them every day. That seems strange until you look at the backside of a $1 bill. Mm-hmm. At the Great Seal of the United States and see this unfinished pyramid and the all-seeing eye that looks out upon us. And it's on that basis that we learn lots about Freemasonry. We learn lots about the founding fathers and their Masonic connections. And we get to see some old places with new eyes.
And would you say that part of the appeal of the new books is that, you know, these clues and puzzles and symbols are all around us in our daily lives? And when people first read the Da Vinci Code, they started looking at things in Paris, and they're looking at, as you said, the dollar bill. And are there other hidden symbols like that around us that we're just not picking up on?
Oh, I think there's a wonderful one in Washington, D.C. Just several blocks north of the White House is the Scottish Rite Masonic Temple called the House of the Temple. And it's hidden between some very tall buildings, so unless you actually drive right past it on 16th Street, you're likely to miss it. And yet once there, and given the ability to go inside, and it's open for visitors, it has this most amazing architecture that goes back to some Greek traditions, to some Egyptian traditions. So one of the fun things about Dan Brown is to walk in his path, to walk the tracks that his heroes have done, whether that be in Paris, where one would certainly want to go to the Louvre and go around, or in Rome, for example, where this whole series of churches and the Vatican is involved. And clearly places in Washington, D.C., this summer, I believe, that have been mentioned in the novel will become very, very popular.
Okay. Something I'm curious about is, we have all these keys, and all these keys are in the book, and, you know, we're looking at paintings such as The Last Supper, but we're looking at different clues around us. And are they all leading to one general thing? I think some of the more conspiracy-type theories would be that they're hiding something. The Masons were this kind of, shady organization. What are they hiding? Is that's kind of what people are looking at? What are they getting to? What's the purpose of these symbols? Are they hiding something?
That's a major focus of the book, and I certainly don't want to give away the entire secret. However, it's very interesting that the book opens with a quote from a book written in the 1920s by a man named Manly Hall called The Secret Teaching of All Ages. And what Hall tried to do, and he was a very young man, he was in his 20s himself, was to search down the mysteries of the Egyptians, of the Greeks, of the Romans, of the Jewish Kabbalah in the Middle Ages, to take a look at groups like the Illuminati and the Hermetic tradition, the Rosicrucians, the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, take all of the writings that he could gather and look at it and examine in the New York Public Library and put them together in one bundle. The truth, and this will be said in the book, is hidden before our very eyes. None of it is particularly new, I think. It's just that we get a new look at it. It's also true that I think many readers today, and younger readers certainly, may see things, be struck by them, and not realize where they come from. There's a chapter that opens with a quote, "In the beginning was the Word." There's an entire group of people who will recognize that as a quote from the old, from the New Testament. It's St. John's Gospel, verse 1, chapter 1. But Brown simply puts it in there and hopes to arouse your curiosity. One of the characters in the book says it, the search really had to do with creating a fascination for the search of the hidden mysteries. And I hope that Brown's book and my own book will simply encourage people to look deeper, to examine some of these documents, but realize they really are there. None of these things are particularly secret or hidden. If they're hidden, it's simply because our eyes pass over them.
And while we're talking about symbols in the book, Greg and I are both wondering if there's a specific reason for the 33 keys, if you might have put your own symbol into the book title.
Well, if you look at the very cover of Dan Brown's new novel, at least the American cover, it has a seal on it, and that seal has the number 33 in it. And it is related to the 33rd Rite of the Scottish Rite of Masons in the United States. Now, 33 is a very key figure in biblical literature. Joseph apparently married Mary at the age of 33. Christ was crucified at the age of 33. There are 33 vertebrae in the human body. So as one goes by, in the book, on page 333, and that was clearly intentional, Dan Brown, or one of his characters, mentioned that 33 is the most symbolic of all numbers. Dan Brown's book also has 133 chapters. So in putting my own book together to create some order out of the chaos, I drew upon the fact of 33 individual keys or places to look at. My book also has 133 hyperlinks that take this book into the 21st century. And that's a whole nother topic, but this is a book very much made for the 21st century and the hope that people will use computers in particular to hunt down some of the secrets and some of the symbols that are hidden in the book.
Great. Let's talk a little bit more about your book now. You know, we've talked quite a bit about the lost symbol. And can you tell us a bit about your book and how you would use this book in... I mean, would you have the lost symbol open and the companion open next to it? Would you read them in sequence, or would you read yours first? And what are some of the things you talk about?
Well, certainly, I guess I would recommend that people read the lost symbol first so as not to have any of those lost symbols or lost words given away before one approaches the text. On the other hand, I will be speaking about the book, and people who do read this book before the lost symbol, I think will just simply come away with an enhanced appreciation of so much that at first reading may seem hidden. The other thing is that most people are not likely to read the lost symbol twice or three times. I've probably been through the book six or seven times now. So my book will do some of the legwork or hard work. Now, what is special about the book? I think one is that it has 33 images. It has 33 graphic plates, something which the book itself doesn't necessarily have. And so when pictures are mentioned, architectural monuments are mentioned, my book provides immediate access to find those things. It has 133 links. And those links are particularly important because they can take people to wonderful sites, some of them on YouTube, some of them pictures, some of them entire virtual tours of the United States Capitol, of the House of the Temple. Brown mentions in his book, Google is not a synonym for research. And I think as students and faculty, we all know that. On the other hand, the internet can be absolutely amazing in giving us immediate access to, for example, maps and or to wonderful close-up pictures of certain of the monuments and pictures and paintings that are held in the book.
Great. I think we'll take a little break now, but stay tuned. When we come back, we'll continue with our interview with Thomas Beyer, author of 33 Keys to Unlocking Law Symbol. Right now, we're going to play just a couple songs for you, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in.
You're in tune with the progressive sound in Middlebury, Vermont, WRMC-FM 91.7.
After all these years, you're still listening to the inimitable sound of WRMC 91.1 FM.
Welcome back to the interview with Thomas Beyer. Thanks for being with us again, Professor.
Thank you.
Professor Beyer is the author of 33 Keys to Unlocking the Lost Symbol, a reader's companion to the Dan Brown novel. And we've been going through some questions, talking about some generalities of the Lost Symbol and also its companion. And we're just going to continue with a few more questions.
One thing we were interested in was how you went about gathering information necessary to write this companion, and what sources you used beyond the Lost Symbol itself and other Dan Brown works.
Well, you know, Rob, the hints that led to this book appeared already on the cover of the Da Vinci Code. If you had a hard copy of the Da Vinci Code along with the original dust cover, and you would read the inside covers where they described a little bit about Dan Brown and Robert Langdon and what was going to happen, a number of letters are highlighted in bold. And if you select all of these letters out and put them together, they spell a sentence saying, "Is there no help for the widow's son?"
Wow.
And that, of course, is a Masonic message, which is a cry for help or a cry of distress or a way in which Masons from separate lodges can recognize one another. So that already hinted to the fact that Freemasonry would be a major part of this novel. The other hint had to do with a geographical set of coordinates that pointed, most people thought, to CIA headquarters and a statue there or a sculpture which held an encoded message. And all of that led a number of people to begin reading. And Dan Brown's publicist, for in a New York Times interview over 3 years ago, said the new novel is coming out and it's going to be called The Solomon Key. I actually taught a first-year seminar on The Solomon Key in the hope that the novel would have appeared by then, but it didn't. Nonetheless, students wrote about the secret mysteries in Washington, D.C., the connection of Masons to American history, the history of the Great Seal and that pyramid on the dollar bill, Sir Francis Bacon, Sir Isaac Newton, and how those people influenced American thought and the creation of the American nation. So I began reading rather intensively over 4 years ago in the process of this work. And the pleasant surprise when the book appeared was that there was very little in it that I hadn't already read about or gathered information about. And that's what made it possible to write this book essentially over the course of October. We also had, since I was teaching a class on the angels and demons and students were working on Dan Brown, we took a break. And the day the book came out, all of the students received it. We all read it within 1 week, and then we also discussed it, and many of the questions which they gave or presented to me became a part of this book. And in fact, one of the students in the class, Carly Wentz, actually deciphered all of the codes that are on the new dust cover of the American version of the Da Vinci Code. And Carly has an entire chapter of this 33 keys that essentially was written by her. I think it's rather extraordinary to have a first-year student at the college become a published author.
For sure, for sure. So you mentioned you used or you worked with a lot of your students and their resources to write this. Also, did you travel to, or did you go on site to see quite a few of these things that are mentioned in the book? And where did kind of your travels take you in research for this?
Yeah, you know, I have done a number of things for the Department of Education in the past several years. And during my leave, I also spent time at the Library of Congress. So I've been to the new visitor center at the Capitol. I've been to the House of the Temple and to the wonderful Washington Memorial Temple in Alexandria, Virginia. Certainly, I've been to the top of the Washington Monument and taken pictures there. So I had already been to most of the places that are mentioned in the book. The only one that I hadn't visited and that I think that came as a surprise to people was the inclusion of the National Cathedral, which also figures prominently in the book.
So do you think the distinct American themes in the lost symbol, do you think that could create sort of a closer to home experience for readers than the Da Vinci Code, which was taking place largely in Europe? And could that add to the popularity? And what do you see about the popularity of the Lost Symbol in comparison to the Da Vinci Code and Dan Brown's past novels?
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting. I don't think that even Dan Brown or his publishers assume that he's going to sell 80 million copies of the Lost Symbol, which is roughly the sales figures for the Da Vinci Code when you take in all of the languages into which the novel was translated. I have seen actually a Russian translation and have one of the Lost Symbol. It's been translated into all of the major languages already. And my own book has been picked up and is going to be translated into Spanish, Portuguese, and Japanese, and that I hope is just the beginning of where we're going to go. But the point you raise is fascinating because many Americans, whether in their student days as the high school trip or somehow in the course of their parents' vacations and travels, have been to Washington, and having an ability to look at some of these places all afresh, I think is going to add to their popularity. There is one aspect of the book, I don't think we'll give too much away here, in which Robert Langdon is led blindfolded and then ascends to a spot where he has the most magnificent view of the city of Washington, D.C. This is all done in the dark of night with secret permissions and secret codes, etc. But any American is quite welcome to go down and take the elevator up to the top of the Washington Monument. And if you look out in all four directions, you have this wonderful view of the White House to the north and the Capitol to the east, the Lincoln Memorial to the west, and the Thomas Jefferson Memorial to the south. And if you think about that, the Lincoln Memorial is very much like a Parthenon, and the Jefferson Memorial is very much like the Pantheon in Rome. And so I think Americans will like that. And some of what is exotic or was exotic about Rome and Paris for American readers will bring a new, I think, exotic aspect of Washington, D.C. to foreign readers of the novel. And they, too, I think, will gain much from taking a look at my book, which points out some of these things that all Americans might know, but I think there'll be surprises in there, even for those who've been to Washington several times.
Great. Thank you. So it's my understanding that you wrote this book in a very short amount of time, and that you're kind of dependent on when The Lost Symbol itself was coming out. And how in such a short amount of time did you incorporate the depth that is involved in a book that's unlocking another book?
Well, let's begin by saying I've probably read over 100 books to get myself ready and had a complete case worth of, or boxes and boxes worth of notes and preparatory material. But certainly also the internet, which provides, I think, everyone in a very democratic way with access to ancient texts, especially things that were published and are now no longer covered under copyright. So books that are over 75 years old, Brown makes great use of those books, and it was quite easy to access many of those online. And I think that goes to speaking about what is the world of novels, of books, and of literature in the 21st century, and what kind of wonderful access do we have because of the internet?
You know, speaking of the internet, we mentioned before the break, and we were talking during the break, that that this book is a book for the 21st century, and The Lost Symbol, as well as your companion book. And why is this a book for the 21st century?
Well, even characters inside of the book very frequently make use of their laptop computers to access information. There is a clue hidden in a picture where the picture is remembered or recalled by Robert Langdon, but he can't remember exactly, in what becomes a secret square, the sequence of numbers from 1 to 16 that make up this square. And so he uses a computer to access the picture online, take a look at the picture, and then he has that sort of immediate access. It's interesting that Brown himself and his publishers began a rather sophisticated website devoted to this novel, which still has all sorts of games and puzzles, as did the earlier novels. Dan Brown has a Facebook page with over 100,000 friends, and that, beginning in July, started to leak special keys to an audience of people who are excited about following and tracking down this information. So all in all, in spite of his sentence, and I'll say it again because I think it's a fun one, which is that Google is not a synonym for research. Well, it certainly isn't, but it's a good starting place for many, many of the things that you'll find in this book.
Would you say Wikipedia is a good resource?
You know, it's really fascinating because when students and my students over the course of the past 5 years in all three first-year seminars devoted to Dan Brown, we did an early guide, an interactive guide, which is actually online now, called The Keys to the Da Vinci Code, which goes chapter by chapter through that material. And at that time, students had access to the Encyclopedia Britannica online, the Oxford English Dictionary online, but Wikipedia hadn't been invented.
Huh.
This was only 5 years ago. Or if it had been invented, it certainly was nowhere near the popularity that it has today. Students this past semester did a guide to Angels and Demons. One of the real new factors there was not only Wikipedia links, and in fact, the first link that is actually hidden, we don't even cite it as a resource, the first link will take you to a Wikipedia description of that word, author, or historical event, or whatever, if you want. But we also have now the inclusion of video. YouTube was in its infancy back then. Now you can have a YouTube tour, and in fact, YouTube would have made many of the things in this novel easier for the villain, who is hoping to post a video of Masonic ceremonies. Well, in fact, if you go to YouTube today, you can find that many people have already beat him to the punch.
Hmm. Great. One last question for you. How would you say The Lost Symbol in Russian?
The lost symbol in Russian is Utrachenny Symbol.
All right. So for all you Russian fans out there, keep an eye out for that. And Professor Beyer, thank you so much for coming on the show. And a reminder that this Sunday at 2 p.m. in the Ilsley Library here in town in Middlebury, Professor Beyer will be giving a short presentation on his new book, 33 Keys to Unlocking Lost Symbol. And this is co-sponsored by the Vermont Bookstore. Also, 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 21st. And what's the location?
That will be at the Barnes & Noble store on Dorset Street in South Burlington, which is right across the street from the University Mall.
Okay, so Barnes & Noble on Thursday, January 21st, another book discussion. And is it going to be the same? Are both going to be the same format?
No, because this Sunday I'll have an opportunity to show some slides, so that will have some color pictures and some color illustrations and some places in the book. South Burlington doesn't have that capacity, so that will be simply a little bit more of a brief overview of the book and a conversation, and then a book signing for those who are there and wish to have their copies of the book autographed.
Great. Well, thanks so much. Be sure to look out for 33 Keys to Unlocking the Lost Symbol, a reader's companion to the Dan Brown novel, on the internet, Amazon, and in your local bookstore. And thank you so much for coming on the show, Professor.
Well, thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Rob, and have a great day.
Thanks.